Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We know that the Bureau of Labor Statistics issues monthly and annual reports on the job opening, and it's called JOLTS, job openings, and my mind just went blank. And Labor Turnover Survey finally came back to me. And we typically visit with Mark Hamrick, Washington Bureau Chief and Senior Economic Analyst at Bankrate.com. And he joins us to kind of tear this thing apart and let us know what it really says. Mark, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, my friend. It's been too long, so it's always a pleasure to be back with a good friend.
Absolutely, sir. So a lot of going back and forth on these reports, as always, right, depending on who's laying it out. So what can we glean from this report?
Yeah, let's put it in context, Newell, because this is kind of data dump week for the federal government. A lot of really important things happening. And so the cadence of this in this particular week is we get the job openings data on Tuesday in a normal week. We have jobless claims out today, and then tomorrow, the big kahuna of the month, which is the monthly employment report, which is the one that has the potential to move markets and even perhaps over the series move the Federal Reserve. And so your question about the so-called JOLTS report, which stands for, you know, Washington loves acronyms, it's Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey. Really, I think the headline here is a cautious cooling job market, and that's consistent with what we've been seeing for many months now. We saw both job openings and hiring easing in June. This is a little bit of a delayed report. So the data is as of the last day, a business day for the month of June. Neither layoffs nor hiring seem to have much positive momentum. And we know we're in an environment where there's much uncertainty and volatility, and I think many employers don't want to get caught with either too many people on hand, too much headcount. They're also reticent to engage in mass layoffs, and that is the good part of the story. If you boil it all down, this job openings number, when you align it with the number of people who are unemployed, there's a one job opening for every single unemployed job seeker. So 1-to-1 is the ratio there. And when the job market was red hot about 3 years ago, the ratio was 2 jobs open for every unemployed job seeker. So at his news conference, which I attended yesterday, Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell really talked about the demand and supply of labor essentially being in pretty good balance. And what's interesting also in the current environment is we've been seeing both legal and illegal immigration coming down. And both of those had been a large source for the labor market in recent years. And so the irony there is that as we have essentially the job market cooling, we also have fewer people coming into the job market, sort of raising their hands and looking for work. And that helps to maintain a lid on the unemployment rate, which recently was at 4.1%.
Mark, there's been some anecdotal stories and or examples and nuances about wage increases as a result of what you just described. Are you seeing that at all?
Wage growth is still above the pace of inflation. And so, you know, for everybody who is making progress in that years-long war, you know, kudos for them. I think typically it's lower paid workers who are making the most progress. And if you look at it from not from a selfish perspective, but from the one where you hope that people who are struggling have a better lot in life. That is good news. But listen, you know, the number one issue, which you know well, in the presidential campaign, at least economically speaking, was inflation. Inflation is not going away. Elevated prices are still very much a fact of our daily lives. And if you look at the consumer price index, essentially where the price levels are, not so much about the recent changes, we're up 24% in that metric since January 2020. So for all the progress, if you want to call it that, with wage growth moderating but not contributing to inflation overall, I think there are a lot of people who'd raise their hands and say, okay, that's fine, but I'd like to have a little more, please.
Yeah, no, I get it. When the Federal Reserve is looking at these numbers, I mean, the debate right now as to whether or not there should be a cut in rates is raging, right? And we had two dissenting votes, which has not happened in a long, long time. There's usually unanimity amongst the governors. What do you attribute all of this to right now at the present time? Why is there this kind of leakage from this unanimous vote that we have grown very accustomed to?
I think, first of all, it's a tough call. And we're dealing with things that are in many ways unprecedented. And there are a number of boxes at the top of that list. One is the level of tariffs is the highest in a century before the Great Depression. The other thing is, essentially, you have the president throwing a lit match into gasoline where he's trying to pressure the Federal Reserve using the bully pulpit. And I don't think that's tremendously effective, but that pressure exists nevertheless. And Chairman Powell himself is saying, you know, we are essentially politically vaccinated from what the president is doing, at least in the process. And of course, we know that Chairman Powell only has until next May in this position as chair. So number one, it's a tough call. Number two, we don't really know how it's going to work out. You know, I mean, we're all living and breathing as we're, what, 4 months since the April 2 announcement on the tariffs. But, you know, every day there's a new headline on how tariffs are being adjusted. And so, you know, it's followed the bouncing tariffs ball. And so trying to make predictions about how much more of these costs are going to be actually passed along to consumers is extremely difficult. And essentially what Chairman Powell described, which I think is a good way of putting it, is there are problems with moving too early on both sides of the equation, meaning, you know, and one of the things he said, which was kind of remarkable yesterday, was he said, listen, you know, some things that we look at with the inflation data are moving up. And so we didn't raise interest rates today. But the other part is that if they were to cut too aggressively or too soon, that could add further fuel to the inflation fire. And they certainly don't want to be in the situation where they're doing a Texas two-step where it's, you know, move rates down and then have to move them back up again.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Mark, what I find interesting about the conversation as it relates to tariffs, it's not as if we've never raised them before, but I've not heard a lot of conversation about the lag, meaning, yeah, you know, at what point in time would we expect to see an impact and how we can go about identifying that? I don't hear many people talking about that at all.
Well, economists are, business leaders are. You just haven't been in those meetings as maybe as much as you were in the past. So You can if you want to put that on your to-do list, make sure you got your liquor cabinet stocked. But usually you
would think mainstream media, somebody would be talking to folks about this lag and what historically we've experienced, right? I mean they've mentioned the word lag, but nobody's ever like put chart up there to say, you know, we increased tariffs in 1990 whatever, and this was the lag, and we started to experience, you know, some pressures as a result of the increase in the tariff.
It's a good question and point. I totally agree. I mean, the other part is, frankly, and you know this from your work, is there's only so far you can go on the nuance where people move on and say, okay, what about the Kardashians, right? So,
right. of utmost importance to everything.
Exactly. But to try to answer the question, the consensus, I think, is that it will happen here in the second half of the year. The level at which it happens, we don't know. And part of the problem is that, as I just mentioned, the tariffs are currently at a level that are the most in a century. It's also the most globalized economy, in a sense, that we've ever experienced. So, you know, it's a little like what do we have that is a historical precedent that we can gauge this against? And the reality is that we don't really. And so to nail it down, if we look at, let's say, what the Federal Reserve looks for in the sense of where the data should be or where they'd like the data to be, the long-term GDP or annualized growth rate for the U.S. is roughly 1.8%, or let's just round it up and say 2. Well, by the end of the year, they think that the impacts from tariffs are going to be enough to move it down closer to 1%, and most economists are in that boat as well. And then with inflation, their target for inflation over the course of the year is essentially 2%, and they think that that's going to move up to 3%. Now, as you know, in this very politically bipolar environment in which we live, where, you know, a whisper becomes yelling in a moment's notice, gets amplified, you know, we experienced 9% inflation at the peak here 3 years ago. In the summer of 2022. And so if indeed it's true we move from 2 to 3, that's not the end of the world, far from it, but it's not where people want it to go. And so to your question, and maybe people might wonder, well, how is this working or why would it work this way? The main reason is because the ports in the country saw a rush of imports coming in to try to head off or get ahead of the tariffs. And at some point, those inventories are going to be drawn down, and then they have to start, you know, shipping in earnest again. And with that, then you have to pay the tariffs.
Yeah. And actually, it's funny. We had a bill of lading in my little coffee group this morning. An individual was bringing in goods from overseas. And I think the price of the product itself was about $239. With all the tariffs on and fees on top of it, the price ended up being like $700. Mm-hmm. And you know, when you look at it in the breakout that way, and they have each line item and how much, you know, goes to this and how much goes to that, it's like, wow. I mean,
yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that really shows the problem with the lack of targeting on all this, right? Because, you know, you could raise the price of coffee to the point where nobody can afford it, and yet there's still not going to be any capacity to produce it in the United States. Right. And so, you know, that ultimately is the problem with these very broadly applied tariffs is, you know, we can't grow avocados, you know, 12 months a year, you know, we don't have plants that can just all of a sudden ramp up automobile production with the flip of a switch, the same with iPhones. I think we all understand what some of the aspirations of the administration involve. There are some that are head scratchable, such as, you know, very political things, such as, you know, the prosecution of a political figure or, you know, how are tariffs actually going to resolve drug overdose deaths in this country? That's more complicated. But I think we understand the aspiration. The question is, does the medicine actually help the patient? And that coffee example is a great one where, no, it just means that everybody who wants to get their caffeine is going to have to pay more.
And we're paying a lot now already.
Yeah, exactly.
I think my cup of coffee is like almost $6 every morning.
There you go.
And it's not that complex.
You don't have the sugar-free vanilla chai latte?
No, it doesn't take 20 seconds to rattle off what I desire. If they charge by the word, it'd probably be about, you know, a lot more for some of these preferences
exactly.
that are out there. But as always, we truly appreciate your time, Mark Hamrick, and your insight. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get you back on a more routine schedule here. Things have been crazy, my friend.
Oh, I hear you. It's always my great pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Truly appreciate it. Have a great weekend. We'll be right back, folks. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
Moms, dads, are you the parent of a student athlete? Do you want to know how to get the most out of youth sports? If so, listen to the Next Pitch podcast to give you the tools to raise an aspiring athlete. It's not simple, but we talk straight and give you the best insight there is when it comes to youth sports. We'll cover everything from nutrition and training to mental toughness and teamwork. It's a podcast you can listen to together with your kids so everyone can benefit. Follow Next Pitch on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.